our speaker, and I can't wait to hear it. His name is Bobby J.
Bobby J.
Bobby J.
She whispered to me, and because now. He knows I'm vertically challenged. And over the years, he's had a lot of fun wherever we were together, anywhere. And I was speaking, he would find something for me to stand on. One year, we were out at University City at the Church Cibolo Group. And all he could find was the city's phone book. So I stood on the city's phone book for an hour. My name is Bob, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
Sobriety date, May of 78. For all that time, I'm very, very grateful. There's a couple of things I'd like to get out of the way every time I'm invited to speak here. And the first thing I want to tell you is how grateful I am to the people who had this place operating when I got here. Two of them are sitting right here, Jim W. and Roger D. There's some others still around. Not many. But the tremendous gift for all y'all. I don't know how many people are in this room right now. Over 100. You know, a debt of gratitude to these gentlemen and the ladies who did that for us. And then you have a responsibility, like I do, to support them, this group and this club with your time and with your money. This place doesn't run by itself. This is not home. Mom and Dad not taking care of you. You have to pay the bills and the rent and all that stuff. Think about that from time to time, what this place does and what it means. The second thing is I have a home group, Tuesday night Big Book Study, Alamo Heights United Methodist Church. We meet at 7:30 and we study the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the present time, we're in Dr. Bob's Nightmare, which we will finish probably in a couple of weeks. That's not a long story, is it, Thea? And so we'll be finishing that, and then we will start over again at page one. Takes us about a year. Doesn't it, right, Bill? About a year to go through, a year in some days or a year in a few days. And then you will have been through 164 pages plus Bob's story. And you can't say you don't know anything about this program because you would have heard it all. We just do it one paragraph at a time. Even for those who are slow like me can get it that way. And everybody gets a chance to participate. It's an open meeting. Everyone's permitted to be there. Standard for AA open meetings. But only alcoholics are allowed to share. We have a couple other rules in that group that may appeal to some of y'all. One is that the group is a standard, no 13-stepping. We want the women in our group to feel incredibly safe when they get there. And we will admonish any man that violates that tradition. The other is we want to welcome you there. I hope you feel welcome in AA. You should feel warm and at home and friendly and everything. Safe, secure, all the fuzzy feelings when you come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you feel that way this morning. My sponsor's sitting right there, Bill T. Jonathan says about me when he speaks, if you don't like what I say, it's his fault. If you like what I say, that would give me all the credit. So he gets all the blame and none of the credit. Which seems like a fair responsibility to be a sponsor. Does Jonathan think so? I know John B. is here somewhere, and John probably feels the same way towards me. I'm encouraged to let y'all know how I got sober. Yeah, because lately, the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've been at fellowship conventions and speaker meetings, and the guys never got sober. And they stayed drunk for a long time, but they never did get sober. So Bill was going to bring a sign. I noticed he didn't bring it, but he was going to hold it up just to say, get sober. To make sure I didn't bore you all with a lot of drunk along. I was talking to Mike at breakfast this morning, and Mike says to me that if a guy's speaking at AA, he probably didn't have to qualify himself to be an alcoholic. Why else would I be up here? I usually play golf on Sundays. It isn't that I don't have other things I like to do on Sunday morning. I got sober in 78, and I was married to a girl then. Her name was Alice, and she and I had a very, very stressful, argumentative, confrontive, violent marriage, totally full of chaos and frustration and anger and fear and emotional cruelty and physical cruelty and adultery. Anything you can think of distasteful in a marital relationship, she and I had. And over the last 10 years of that drunken marriage, from time to time, we would separate. I remember once a year, and I had my own apartment, another time, 6 months. So in the winter of 78, after a really bad drunken spell and a big brawl that she and I had, I left home again and rented an apartment over on Broadway. And she was in therapy. I don't remember the guy's name now. And he encouraged her to go into treatment for her alcoholism. At that time, I didn't think I had a problem. I was convinced she did, but I didn't think I did. So I was going to a aftercare program for that treatment center. I think maybe April, early May. And because she was gone from the house, I had been asked to go back over there and watch after the dogs. And I had a daughter still living at home, and I'd watch after Robin. And then I would go to this aftercare meeting Thursday night at St. Luke's, La Hacienda Aftercare. And a couple who became later on two of my best friends, Ken and Tommy Dahlman, went there. And Tommy started working on me. Tommy is I don't know what she is now, but at that time, she was a cadet, chemical, alcohol, drug counselor. Anyway, that's the acronym for it. Not LCDC, but whatever it was back then. And she began working on me about my drinking. I was pretty resistant to that, because I didn't think I had the problem. I didn't believe I had the problem. And so, Robin, my daughter, was graduating from Mac the end of May. And my mother, I'm from Illinois originally. Sometimes y'all pick up on that. And I'm not from here, anyway. And I'm from somewhere else. A little town called Waukegan up north of Chicago, about 20 miles out of Lake Michigan. So my mom comes down for the high school graduation. And sitting at the house is me and mom and my daughter to prep for this graduation ceremony. And Tommy's working on me. And I'm telling her, no, I don't want to do that. I certainly don't want to do it now with all this important stuff going on. Well, mom's here. Daughter, big deal. Well, I don't want to be thinking about doing something about my drinking at this time. So she gets disgusted with me, fed up, trying to convince me of truth when I'm not wanting to hear it. And so she said, well, why don't you ask them, that's my daughter and my mother, what they want you to do? So like a fool, I went home and asked them. And they had a resounding quarrel. You better go now and do something. So on May 31st, I checked myself into La Hacienda Treatment Center. up in Kerrville, Texas, and was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they had an AA function there. A guy named Dutcher ran it. I never remember Dutch. And we had a really large exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. For example, they would bring us down here every Friday night, which was a huge meeting at that time. Mm-hmm. And they would caravan us down, and we would attend meetings here. We attend meetings in Kerrville, and then they brought meetings to us at La Hacienda. La Hacienda is a really nice treatment center. I had a private room right by the swimming pool. It was really nice. What you're inclined to forget is that it's a psychiatric hospital. and you have a... I didn't want to have a mental problem. I had seen Snake Pit or something when I was a teenager about this horrible insane asylum in Ireland or Scotland or somewhere. And it was just an awful movie. Depressing and upsetting and just frightening. And so I didn't want to be in that category of individual. I had a much larger opinion of myself. Actually, it's a problem to this day. Sometimes not justified by the facts of the matter, but you may hear some of that before I'm through today. So anyway, that's what they did. They introduced us to AA. And then when we graduated, it was about the 4th of July of that year, they gave us the best advice that a treatment center could ever give you. They said, when you leave here, you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got out on a Sunday, and I came here to this club. I'd already been introduced to it by the center. And they had a little meeting room back over in the area where the Al-Anons are right now. But it was a small meeting area. And a guy named Bill Richards was chairing that beginner's meeting 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. That meeting still goes on, by the way, with people with 90 days or less. And I got to see the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to see it because at that time, where all these people are sitting over there, was a little day room set up kind of deal with a sofa and some chairs. And all the guys would kind of sit over there and then appraise all the women as they walked in. Some got a 10, some got an 8. But that's what the guys would do. And you get the impression, if you're a guy, that you can still have all guy things and be sober. So the big thing in my mind was that I wasn't going to drink anymore. I had realized at La Hacienda that alcohol was my problem and I needed to stop drinking, so I committed myself to not drink. I wasn't going to drink again. But I also committed myself at the same time that life was going to be dreary and drab and no fun, no girls, no sports, no hunting, no fishing, no jokes, none of that, nothing. Just a long, gray, dismal sort of existence. You know, at that time I thought of it about 20 years. I was 43, so I thought I might make 63. By now I'm hoping for 83. But anyway, just that deal there. And that was my vision of what life would be like, sober. I wasn't going to drink, and committed to that, and have stayed committed to that. But I didn't think anything else would happen. I didn't think anything else would, other than that. And then I witnessed, primarily in the men, although Margaret Wagner comes to mind, and a few other women here at that time who were sober and had their act together. But you would see these guys, and they were doing all the guy things. No time at all, I had a golf game. No time at all, I had people to go fishing with. No time at all, I had people to eat with. Breakfast, lunch, supper. I lived there. At that time, this place had two meetings a day, 11 a.m. and 8:15. And I made both of them almost every day. And I needed all of that. This is my story. I don't want you to appropriate it for yourself. I didn't work a lot of steps. I was hell on the first one. And then I pretty good with 12, maybe a little under 13. I don't want y'all to think I'm anything that I'm not. Because throughout my life, I have had an anger issue. Because I'm a little fella. I always was a little fella. I was much smaller as a boy. I graduated high school at 4'11 and 97 pounds. And I had been threatened, I guess is the word, run home from high school. And I had a younger sister who's bigger, taller, and heavier than I am, and she would fight the boys for me. If I fought him, I got whipped. Everybody was bigger than I was. So I've always had what, for lack of a better word, I just call it a little man's disease. Short fuse, stinger out all the time. Very sensitive if I thought you were disrespecting me or attacking my self-image in any way whatsoever. Imaginary even. It didn't have to be real. I don't want you all to think that it had to be real. I'll explain that further in a little while. I just had this issue, this fear-based, these feelings, and I didn't deal with them very well. So I'm here in the club, and I'm doing a lot of meetings, and I'm not drinking, but I'm not getting nothing. I just wasn't getting anything. But I still have this commitment to not drink, and I'm holding on to that for dear life. So the first wife and I, after a period of time, we get divorced. Like 2 weeks. I think you all gave me this ultimatum. I don't know if it's ultimatum anymore or not. Don't make any major decisions for a year. And so the first year, we kind of hated each other as we passed each other in the hall. And then at the end of the year, I left her again. And at the end of another year, we were divorced. And I thought, now I'm sober. Now I'm free. Everything's going to work out really, really well. Well, that's a sad tale, too, of my illusions. But I get married again, and then because of my anger issues and fear, she can't stand me, so I get divorced again. Now I'm 10 years sober, and I've heard you guys for 10 years, and I know life is not supposed to be this way, and I'm supposed to be fracturing relationships. I'm supposed to be able to live life on a spiritual plane rather on my material plane, I guess is a good word, than any physical plane. And so I started doing some other things. I tried Codependence Anonymous for a year. I met Charlotte there, my wife. Well, y'all need to meet her. That's a wonderful woman right there.
Mm-hmm. Very Charlotte.
To put up with me. It's not easy. 28 years this year.
Wow.
Sometimes, when stressed, tired, what do they say? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When one of those things hit me, I'll say some stupid things. I'll do some stupid things. And she has a lot of patience with that. So some of that patience she's outgrown. When we were first married, she had a lot. Now she snaps back every once in a while. Probably call that maturity on my part and her part. I hope so. Yeah. So I tried Codependence Anonymous. I went to Jim's Canterbury for a year on Tuesday night, trying to work on an 11-step program, knowing at this time in my sobriety that the spiritual solution is the answer to all my problems. I can't emphasize that enough. It's the answer to all my problems. I don't care what your problem is. It doesn't even matter. Your problems don't even matter. I know they're important to you. I can't emphasize to you too much how important they were to me. My problems were important to me. Okay? Relatively insignificant to these people around me, but very significant to me. So I knew that I had to find an answer. I didn't even entertain the option of drinking. I didn't say, well, if I don't find an answer, I'm going to drink, or I don't find an answer, I'm going to commit suicide. I never thought about those things. All I said is, I've got to find an answer. I can't live this way anymore. Essentially, it's the same thing I had when I quit drinking. So I had to find an answer to the drink problem, then I couldn't live that way anymore. So now I've been sober a while, and life isn't turning out really well. So I'm saying, I got to find an answer. And I began searching for one. And as God would do it, I want to tell you, as life will come to you. In that year, in that summer, Bill asked me to take over a Big Book study here at Club Dwell. And I said yes. And I started doing a Big Book study. We started in that little room. We graduated to this room. Then we digressed to that room. But we did that for a number of years. I was invited to serve on the board out the ARC, which is now the Lifetime Men's Treatment Center. And off and on, I served out there for a number of years. And I was also invited to be on a committee for alcohol and drug abuse, Alamo Area Council of Governments, ACOG, it's called downtown. It's like God said, if you were serious about wanting to do something about the way you're living, I'm going to immerse you in this thing, and you're going to get what you need in order to change the way you are. And that's the important thing that had to happen for me here, is I had to change who I am or who I was. The whole thing about the way I was raised, the kind of physical individual I was, being small and very sickly, they all contributed me to being this screwed up psychological mess. Drinking made me feel better about myself, and I didn't care. If you didn't like me, I didn't care. I didn't like you, I didn't care. If you wanted to fight, okay, I didn't care. If you didn't want to be with me, that's fine. I didn't care. I care about nothing. As long as I was drinking. When I wasn't drinking, then I cared about a lot of stuff. So what happens when I get sober? Now I'm not drinking, so now I'm caring about a lot of stuff. And then I got to do something about that. I can't tell you how powerful AA is about that. I spent some time in Al-Anon, and they had a little back room here behind me where they store the food now. But it was an Al-Anon men's meeting on Monday night. And when I came in, one of the first guys to befriend me, a guy named Blackie Cox, and one of my first sponsors, a guy named Tom Marcel. They started that meeting up again. It had been disbanded for lack of interest. they started up again because they realized how much trouble I was in. As a way of an aside, I came in one day and Blackie was sitting on that sofa over against that wall, and I sat down next to him and he got up and left. He said, "No," he said, "I can't stand the vibrations that are coming off of you. I can't stand it." He got up and went over here somewhere. And I had to chase him down. I said, wait a minute, I'll be different. I'll be a good boy. Don't reject me. Love me, love me. And he did. He loved me. He did. Good man. Hard day. I had to put his coffin in a hearse. 88. I think it was 88, January. And was it difficult? But one of the things they tell us in here is pray for God's will for you. Not what my will is for you, but what God's will for you. So we were doing a cab thing on New Year's Eve. San Antonio Council on Alcoholism used to do this. You'd man the phones, and if a drunk called in, then you would arrange a cab to take him home, and there would be no charge to the drunk. And you kept the drunk driver off the road. So after we got through like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, we went up to Baptist where Blackie was dying. And we were up there. I think Charlotte was with me. And Tommy and Kim were with us. And Vivian, Blackie's wife, was with us. And Tommy told her, "Well, why don't you go in and just let him go? Just say, listen, it'll be all right. You go ahead. I'll join you later." And whatever the fond words you can think of to say to somebody you love. And so she went in and did that. And he died in a couple of days. He could relax and go. And all along, I had been praying for him to stay with me. Because of being a selfish, self-centered alcoholic that I am, I hate to tell you that. I know we don't like to call other people out on stuff, but you're also all your self-centered.
Of course you are. Without a doubt.
I got that from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't get that by education or nothing. I got that because Bill Wilson said it, driven by a thousand forms of fears, et cetera, you know, we think self-centered, and this will kill us if we don't deal with it. So I had been praying for Blackie to live, and I let him go too. I said, "Well, I don't know what your will is for him. I don't know what your will is for me, for crying out loud. And whatever it is, let it happen." What happened? And it was sad. We saw Vivian off and on over the years, and Charlotte and I did. And their kids, I see their kids from time to time, not very often, but some. They were a big part of this place. This place. This is a special place. I had an occasion Sunday a week ago to be in Kerrville. It was two weeks ago. And I went to their club, 720 Club, downtown Kerrville. And it's their house. It's a house. And they do meetings there throughout the week. They call it a recovery house now. They don't call it an AA club house anymore. And they have, for all the andas in the world, they have it, NA and CA and SLA and OA. And anybody can meet there, they just pay them a rent. It's nothing like this. You'll travel the country and go to clubhouses and you won't see another one like this. Mm-hmm. I had been in Brady 3 weeks ago. They're in an old Baptist church. And the floor's kind of sagging and the restroom's kind of beat up. Nothing like it. But we're gifted with it, this place. Just absolutely nothing like it. I sit in where Charlotte is now and I'm looking at the pictures from Toronto in the year. And the memories just flowing over you. about, we had a room in Toronto, and everybody would sign this big, used to be on the wall over here, I don't know what they did with it. But everybody that came through that room said, we'll see you in sanatorium in 5 years. And then when it was here, all this community supported the AA International. We had 55 or 60,000 people down there. So Charlotte had me. She couldn't be there. So I recorded the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer on my phone and sent it to her so that she could be a part of that. You have an opportunity here. I hate it when I fall into my preacher mode. I'm not a preacher. My college training, I'm an engineer. All I know is left brain stuff. Black, white, that's it. Tunnel vision, that sort of deal. I lost my place. I'll give it back. Just takes a minute. Some of y'all don't know this about me, and I'm not looking for sympathy. I don't care about how you feel about me either way. I'd like it if you love me, but if you don't, that's okay too. I'm not worried about that. But I had a very serious heart episode this year, and they put a new valve in my heart. I was telling Jim about it. They go up and then it's a Star Trek kind of operating room, and I'm dying, and Charlotte is worrying about me, and guys at Spotchell are worrying about me, and the kidneys are shutting down, and it looks like I can see the edge. Well, some years ago, I had made a deal. I really hate to make a deal with God. I made a deal with God that no matter how these things turn out, I'd be fine. If I died, I'd be fine. If I'm living, I'll be fine. If I'm well, I'll be fine. As y'all can see, I'm well. I'm doing okay. The deal is, sometimes I slip a cog. And a moment ago, I just slipped. I was talking about one thing, slipped into another, and then can't get back. That happens. I felt so good about AA in San Antonio when the International was here. How we supported it, what the General Service Office out of New York thought we'd done a really good job. I know that there were AA members here in San Antonio that had worked for years to get us that thing. It's not like we're on the rotation. I don't think New York ever thought about putting it in San Antonio without us saying, please, please, you know, we can do it, we can do it. And we'll support it, and we'll help you put it on. And so many of my friends work various functions down there, doing this and doing that, just to make it come off without a hitch. And I hear, although I don't know New York, we don't even talk about it, that's sad. Because I could tell them how to run this place better. It's just sad. You kind of get pushed off to the side a little bit. When you get old, it's pathetic. It's just pathetic. How you guys don't listen to me anymore when I try to pontificate about how things ought to be done. And say, oh yeah, but let's hear the old man out. And then go ahead and do. AA's in good hands. I had an opportunity. I did a little bit of volunteer work for the International Texipal thing here a couple of years ago downtown. The group I'm with, the Tuesday night group, took responsibility on a couple of mornings for the hospitality room. I don't know, every morning was it, Mike? I think it was every morning. And I don't know how many people who were here for that, Bill would know. I'm guessing 20,000, 15,000 kids were here. Kids to me, yes. They're not children. They're young adults. But I realized in that time span that AA is in good hands. They may do it a little bit different than we did it. They got a lot of chanting that goes on. Bob, we love you. I mean, lots and lots and lots. And it would be embarrassing if it was so damn enjoyable. Anyway, if you're new, I know there's some new people here, and there's some celebrating early sobriety. Get right down in the middle of this thing. Get involved. I don't care where you get involved. It doesn't matter to me at all. If you want to get involved in one of the clubs, Serendipity or Winners or this one, or you want to get involved in the Haven or Alpha or Lifetime, or you want to do the one of the satellite districts, or you want to do the correctional facilities or the public relations people, whatever you want to do, get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so much easier to do in it than it is on the edges of it. My favorite word picture, because we're coming up on football season, so, and I'm a big football fan, so I like this word picture a lot, is that there's two kinds of things where you can participate in football. You can watch it at the voyeur, and you get some kind of thrill out of it, but not the thrill. Or you can play the game, and you get a whole different sense of what football's about. Well, AA's like that too. You can sit in a chair like a voyeur and watch others do it and not get the thrill of it, not get the spiritual experience, not get the results. We say here that God, not your problem, God could and would if you were sought. Very important words. You don't have to find it. All you have to do is look for it, and things will happen. Originally, it was written can and will. A little more definitive phrase for that can and will if sought. But anyway, I don't want you to be a voyeur in AA. It's just like meeting makers, like I did for a number of years. Not being a part of. An edge. If you get down in the middle of it, do something. It doesn't have to be much. I can tell you what was really important right now today is as soon as I get through and this meeting's over, somebody's going to put up all these chairs. So you can put up all these chairs. If you want to participate in AA, put up your damn chairs. That's all I'm saying. It's kind of like any relationship that's important to you. And you want to participate in it. I don't care if it's a marriage or with your kids or with your parents or whatever. You want to participate in the relationship. And if you don't participate in AA, you don't get the relationship. And you may get something. I got something. But I don't get what AA promises. Mary read the promises. Almost with every step, I'm pretty sure about this, with every step there's a promise. And almost all of them say that you will have peace and serenity and you will find that you know God better after every step. So work a step, go to a meeting, get a sponsor, have a home group. All the things everybody else will tell you, I'll tell you. Some of them you've heard many, many times before. And go ahead and do it. Some of these people that I've known a while have come to the same meetings that I go to for years now. And it's not like we're doing anything original. I want you to think that it's not like the group I think is special, but it's not special in the world of things. It's a big book study. We read a paragraph and we talk about it. What's special about AA is the fellowship, the relationships, and this experience of God. And when you're in an AA meeting, at least the kind I enjoy most, God is present. God is present. Fred Pratt, who was here for many, many years and has since passed away, used to talk about that. I don't know how many people are in this room. For argument's sake, I'm just going to say 100. Okay? You bring the peace of God with you. If you're not here, it's only 99% because you didn't come. You didn't bring your peace of God with you to us so we could all share it together. The feeling, the safety, the security, all the things that Mary read about, all the things that AA promises, all the things that you see in other recovering alcoholics, all of that can come true for you, but you have to be here. You cannot be, they used to call it AWOL when I was in the service, absent without leave. You can't be gone and have it happen. You're not going to read it. You're not going to learn it like I learned in college. You're not going to get out of a book. Okay? Although the book's important, and that's all I do is big book studies. You're not going to get it from hearing it. Guys like me and others talking, I heard Clancy last Saturday. Guys like Clancy, guys like I listened to, Sandy and Johnny Harris, and guys over the years that I've paid a lot of attention to. You're not going to get it that way. You're not going to get it through the seat of your britches by sitting there. You're going to get it by doing it. Doing it. It's an action program. It's on the wall everywhere. I think it's 12. Somebody tell me. I think it's 12. It's not 1 in 12. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like 12 of them. And if you do them, then it says you will get this spiritual feeling, awakening, they call it, as a result of this course of action, is these steps. And you will feel differently about each other and about yourself. Thank you very much.
Wow!
Woo-hoo!
No, me neither. That's going to be on there. We love you, Bob.